Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. Derek Madden, he's Matt Kolsky. Are we doing it? Are we putting the hex on the
I'm
show
not
today?
I'm not afraid. Jinx it. Jinx the hell out of it. We're doing a short show today.
We are. We don't have a ton to cover, if you remember the homework.
I do.
So not only am I confident we're going to do the show, short show, I'm going to start it with a detour.
Oh, boy.
Just that's how confident I am.
Okay, I'm losing confidence by the second, but hit me.
Fuck Woody Allen.
Yeah.
That's my detour.
Okay.
I've been meaning to say it on the podcast for like 3 weeks, but now I've seen the whole show. Mm-hmm. And I can say with confidence, fuck you, Woody Allen.
Yeah.
On to the next thing.
Okay. I didn't watch the show. I have nothing to add or subtract from that. I feel like you covered it.
It's one of those. The show is one of those things you will learn things. Mm-hmm. Like there's definitely new material in the show, mm-hmm. but you know it also feels like things you already knew. It's all you learn things you already kind of suspected. I would say would be the way to go about that.
Yep.
So it is weird how much of a through line through his work some of this stuff was. That part was interesting to me. Okay.
As you say, though, that stuff is pretty widely available and realized.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gross. There are definitely some free Britney Spears vibes, though, I think, in maybe the way that we talk some of this. What was that? What was the name of that show? Was it Free Britney Spears? What was it?
Framing Britney Spears. But it was like a news special, right? It was like a New York Times.
Yeah. But, you know, it's sort of when you look back at some of the old interviews with Woody on the topic or some of the way things were handled, you know, 20, 25 years ago, you know, you do realize things are different for sure.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Let's talk about the stuff we actually all watched this week.
Okay.
Where do you want to start? I'll throw this to you. A couple of interesting options here.
Let's start with Last Chance U because I loved it. I mean, I only got through two episodes, but...
As did I.
I'm all in on this. I don't know that I have any particular comparisons football to basketball in terms of the sport, other than that. Basketball is my favorite sport, but I also love football. So I don't know that changes much for me, but it's just the format is utterly compelling. And I'm sure they could do this at 100 different community colleges in 5 different sports around the country and have it be equally compelling because the stories of these kids – you just immediately feel for them, you know? It's just...
Yeah, I mean, that part is true, and I think, like Cheer is a good demonstration of that. Like, yep. you can just about take it out of sport, and it's still really compelling because of the kids. I did think, though, that basketball is particularly ripe for it, to the point where I was almost a little surprised
it
that
took this long.
They did football first. You know what I mean? Because basketball is so much more of a, you know, personal sport. Like when you think about the NBA versus the NFL, we feel like we know NBA players so much more because they're kind of, you know, they're almost naked out there, really, right? Like,
well, and
you know,
they're just their faces aren't covered and there's way fewer of them.
Right.
I wonder if that's part of the reason, though, is like I don't know how many of these guys have a real NBA shot. Whereas, you know, the NFL's so damn big. There's so many players on a freaking football team that, like, some of those guys have a real shot, you know?
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's a numbers game. sort of thing.
There's also just the idea of, like, if I have 100 kids, I got a better chance at a really great story right. popping out than if I have 12 or 15.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, that said, I think in terms of picking a team to do a basketball season about, they did a good job, man.
It's a home run. It's a home run because you feel like they got at least two, if not three kids that, you know, at least have a chance at very high college basketball competition, if not pro. I mean, the kid they got out of high school in LA, who was the high school player of the year, who just didn't have the grades for major colleges, like, he can play.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got the kid who, you know, looks like he's not going to be able to pull it together, but certainly has the size and talent to be a high-level college player, potential NBA prospect. And then the sort of guard who is just the most lovable, like, through two episodes, you know, he's the captain you want to play for. Deshaun, I believe, is his name.
Yeah.
Looks to me like he could play some college ball for sure. And maybe like some, you know, he talked about potentially wanting to play overseas.
Yeah. He's another guy that was right. He played major college ball and dropped down. Like Joe did. And of course, Joe is a find in terms of television story. Cause, you don't ever quite know where that's
going
to go.
He's going through it, man.
Yeah, like he's really going through it.
Joey,
he's
my
literally
wife
his own worst enemy.
Yeah, my wife was really, really into Joe. She just wants Joe to be okay. Like, she's worried about Joe and his future, and she's like talking him through it as we're watching the show.
I'm worried about Joe too. And what I didn't quite understand, right, is like when they flash back to his prep days, you know. He went to Oak Hill, right? It's a military school, isn't it? Isn't Oak Hill a military school? It's obviously a famous, you know, sort of basketball factory.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a fun question. I'll Google it right now, but you know, I think when you are that level of basketball prospect, anywhere you go is not. No, it's a Christian school, not a military school.
I was just struck by it. It seems like there's just a complete lack of discipline in his life. You know what I mean?
Well, there
I
is.
Say that's his fault. But like,
yeah, it's complicated, and I'm not sure we fully know through two episodes exactly what the thing or things that are really, you know, the roots of some of his issues would be, but I'll say he certainly has trouble controlling himself when he is frustrated or angry, right? I mean, we could see that very clearly, and
yeah,
that is exactly. And you know, the coaches say at one point, I think in episode two, like, "Hey, man, he's not going to get away with any of that shit if he's at a major college. Like, that's why he's here, you know. And if he can't get that stuff figured out." If he can't figure out how not to freak out and quit when stuff isn't going the way he wants it to go, he's not going to make it, you know? And, like, that's – it's pretty cool, man, that there are human beings in the world who feel like it's their job to help a kid like that, because if there weren't, he'd have nobody. I mean, and he says that.
Yes, and I think that's true. By the way, the coach is also – quite a television presence, right? Like, he kind of goes insane too every day.
Phenomenal character. He gets so fired up about basketball, but he also is so clear-headed about his sort of mission and you know, what matters.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing we're seeing, but it kind of gets back to me is it's like, I hear what you're saying about, thank goodness there are people that are willing to give this guy a chance and that... You know, I think there's a we are glossing over a little bit of like, this guy's really good at basketball, right? Like, this is a top 100 player.
Well, but they're not,
you know, coming out of high school.
Yeah, but
that,
they're...
I think that's part of this guy getting a chance. You know what I mean?
Okay, so there's two things here. Number one is, if he wasn't a basketball player, then the basketball coach would not be the one giving him an extra chance, obviously.
I'm not talking about just being a basketball player. I'm talking about being a hooper, as he says. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but also, I think there's, again, like, let's look at the way he's being utilized, which is, in a role that seems more designed to help him learn to control himself than to exploit him for team success, right?
Sort of. I think that I don't know if he's ready for team success. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's my point. I don't think he is, and I think that's why there's a lot of coaches that wouldn't work with him to try to get him there, because it's not worth it to them. And it's not necessarily worth it to this guy either. He seems very aware that, like, this may not work out. But
yeah,
I do think, again, he's a basketball coach. Of course basketball is part of it. And, of course, this kid probably would not get it. You know, it's the talent tolerance scale, always. That never goes away entirely in the sports world. But the tolerance is very high here.
Right. But I'm also saying that that's because the talent is very high. Right.
And that, yeah, but I think
if talent was a little bit lower, I think the tolerance would respond accordingly.
But don't you think the talent tolerance scale for a coach like this skews a lot more towards tolerance in general?
I do.
I think
tolerance is a big part of this thing by necessity, you know, but
of course it's by necessity, but like, this does not seem like the guy who's working his butt off to climb the coaching line. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I guess we'll see. If he leaves East LA in 2 years after they win their title or what have you, then, like, you know, maybe you're right. Yeah.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions. He seems like a decent guy. Well, I think that's kind of like when you're talking about college athletics and somebody's telling you it's just about the morality.
It's not.
It's not.
No.
It's not.
And I'm not buying that it's just about the morality, but if it wasn't at least a little about the morality, I don't think you make it as a coach at a place like this.
I agree. I think it's definitely a little bit about the morality. That's, I think he cares.
That's all.
Like, yeah. I don't think he's insincere, but it's also, it's part of the morality and it's part of the rap. Like, I think John Calipari cares on a sincere level.
I don't know how much about John Calipari cares, but that's I don't know that I agree with that, but that's beside the point. This guy, he's not lying to you about that, right? Like, he says, you know, he says some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to win. And ultimately, if you're not helping the team win at some level, if you're pulling against us, it's not going to work. So, yep. Like, well, he's not lying to anybody, but I don't think
he's lying to anybody.
Yeah. But yeah, he's a college basketball coach, ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little under the surface.
All of that makes the show more interesting. You know, I mean, all of this stuff makes for really, really good content, and you feel like you can get to know, if not every guy on the team, at least you get a really good sense of the team dynamic in a way that I'm not sure comes across in football.
Yeah, I like that part. I kind of already feel like I know everybody on the team
who matters,
even though the show's really focused mostly on the starters, and even really just a couple of starters so far within that.
I think it's going to expand a little bit because we know the names pretty much of all the starters and a couple of bench guys. Right. And I think those are probably all the characters of the show that we're going to move through over a series of episodes. I'm excited about this. I would not be surprised if we finish it over the next few days.
Yeah. It's not a tough watch, although the episodes are kind of long.
They are long. I remembered the football being like 30 minutes, but maybe I'm wrong. These are hour-long episodes.
Yeah, yeah. But again, not difficult to watch at all. And yeah, I can see myself banging out a few.
Yeah, yeah. Just really, I mean, it hits you in the heart. And also worth saying, the basketball scenes are really shot well.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Like, it's dramatic. You can see what's happening. You get a feel for the action. There's a decent amount of basketball. So, like, you feel like you know sort of what's happening in the game, not just you're seeing two or three highlights. I really like that part of it.
Are the guys mic'd?
They have to be.
While they're playing?
They have to be in some way.
How do, like, they do that?
I don't know. They do mic'd up in the pros, right?
Yeah, I guess they do. I love that. I love when KJ dunks on that guy. It's like, why are you jumping, you on Netflix, bro?
Yeah, that's true.
I appreciate them incorporating it into the trash talk. And it is, you know, like you said, those game scenes, you know, that's the kind of access that you've always sort of dream about, you know, having for the NBA. Like, because, you know, when you get those on-mic segments at a game, obviously they are heavily edited to show you things that are, you know, super duper clean and that right. don't give away any strategy.
This
and,
is the dream know. Version, right? This is the dream yeah. version of NBA mic'd up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what you want to hear. You get it all. And they like, also we should say with the Joe storyline, like if you walk into a gym, okay, and don't see any of the action, and you hear, you know, reserve on a community college basketball team talking about why don't you feed me and why are these refs treating me like a thug, your knee-jerk reaction is this guy is clearly out of his mind. That guy gets a rough whistle. Holy Moses.
He does.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like, because the reaction to that, to his complaints, you know, absent context is like, dog, you're a backup on a community college team. There's not a conspiracy against you. Calm down, right? And I'm not saying there's a conspiracy against him, but I am saying those dudes in stripes are incapable of properly refereeing that player.
It's tough. But he's also, he's got a little bit of a Draymond thing going, right? Where he's yes. really showing them up.
And that doesn't
and
help.
I think it's compounding it. You know what I mean?
It's compounding it, but my goodness, man. And look, he's ornery the moment he walks in the game, so that contributes to it too. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, taking the onus off of him. And like, look, if he can grow up and not freak out about every bad call, that's to his benefit, clearly. And it's what he needs to do to get his career back on track. But I get his frustration. Because he's getting... I mean, there was a point in the game that they really dug into where, like, he got called for a terrible offensive foul, a terrible defensive foul, and then he just cooked a dude with a quick first step and got called for
that
a travel.
Yeah, that travel. The travel one was the, like, I'm like, uh-oh, here we go.
it was, I mean, and all, it was like three horrifyingly bad calls right in a row, with the last one being a travel that took away, like, a clear win for him. And, I could just imagine, because he's better than almost everybody. You know, he's the one of the two best talents on his own team, and I haven't seen anybody on any other team that's as good as either of those guys, right? So it's I can only imagine how infuriating it is that, like, he feels like he should be dominating and he's getting whistled for bullshit at every turn.
But
you got to control yourself. I'm not saying, like, he's in the right. You have to control, the same as Draymond. Like, the whole getting tossed at the end of the Charlotte game a couple weeks ago, like, he was right, but you can't do that because you're a grown adult and you have to make responsible decisions for your team.
Yeah, like, second technical was not right. You take, you know, once you take one, you got to shut the F up.
You got to shut up.
You got to, and you basically,
yes. You know? And in this show, you see Deshaun talking to Joe, just being like, listen, you're right. Don't get a tech. You're right. Don't get a tech.
Yep. He says that all the time. Unfortunately, it does not help at all. It never calms him down.
Nothing seems to help with Joe. Joe has to...
Because he doesn't care. He doesn't care if they get attacked.
He's got to solve the problem himself. It's a problem he has to solve himself internally.
Well, and I think the thing we haven't touched on is that he's clearly aware of all of this, right? Like,
in a calm moment...
There are times when he talks about it pretty lucidly.
He is in those calm moments for the interviews, he is as self-aware and, like, responsible sounding as just about anyone that age can be.
Yeah.
And he even says, like, there are just times I lose control of myself. Where he seems to have the disconnect is, like, that's not okay and I have to fix that.
Right. You know, when you're talking about, like, this guy who had, like, just showed up out of jail, you know what I mean? And then you see him a minute later being like, I don't need to be here. It's like, you kind of do, bro.
And then he'll sit down and tell you, like, I have to be here because I have nowhere else. If this doesn't work, I'm done in basketball. And, like, that's where I was a year ago and I ended up in jail. Like, that's not what I want to be. That's not who I want to be. I need to get it together and I need to make it work here. And then... Right. Cut to the game, and he's punching a locker.
Yeah, he doesn't have any sense of that urgency. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes over the course of the season.
Yeah, and like you really do, like for all the complications and for all the you know, bad attitude he shows at times, like I'm rooting for the kid. I mean, I hope it works out for him. I feel like he's got a good heart, and he and in his own way, he's trying to figure it out, and like he's got a ways to go. But I got my fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, I'm rooting for KJ to you know get some C's.
Dude,
those scenes are they're really sweet because he's like, you can tell he's genuinely working at this and trying and just trying to figure out how to put it together.
And I mean this in the most respectful way.
You know what I mean?
He's just not a, he's just academically, he's not a smart kid. Yeah. And I don't mean to, like, I don't know what his IQ is. I'm just like, it seems like he has a learning disability or something, you know?
Right.
Like in the scenes where they're working on his projects, it seems like he needs a professional, not the assistant coach, like a learning professional to help him, because he's not there. And you like, you immediately understand why his GPA wasn't good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're that good at basketball, all you got to do is get up to 2.5, really, you know? Like, just get up
but
to 2.5.
Seems like a good kid.
He seems like a really sweet kid. He seems like a really sweet kid, and he seems really, like, he really understands himself as a basketball player. Like, he seems built for major college ball. He really does, other than the grades. And like, yeah, I'm excited to see more of him too. His family also seems like delightful and sweet. This whole everything feels good right now. You know, there's a lot of kids is sort of in flux and trying to figure their lives out, but like, I feel good about all the characters on the show. I'm rooting for everybody. I really want it to work out.
Yeah, I'm going to be sad when bad stuff inevitably happens to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we got more episodes to go. All right. Moxie. This was another one. I don't, you know, I don't think that, you know, at the end of the year, you know, we'll be coming back and necessarily talking about Moxie is like, oh my God, you know, what a film. But, and I realize it's, this is kind of right in our wheelhouse, but man, I had a really good time watching this show. Like it was a really sweet story, and the kind of story that, I don't know, at least when I was really watching teen movies, didn't get told all that much. And I just love spending 2 hours with that group of kids who were like trying to do something that was actually pretty cool.
I don't want to come off insincere, so I'm gonna try to soft sell my love for this film. And because, you know, that whole thing you just said, we don't see this story a lot. I do think we've said that kind of a lot in the last couple years, in a positive way about new types of stories that are being told. And I just feel like I'm searching for words to say that same thing in a more dramatic and, like, you know, extreme way for this movie.
Like, yeah, it's like
the essence of this movie is so basically feminist, I guess is the way to say it. In a way that, look, I mean, it's a high school dramedy. Like, it's a classic genre film. It really is. It's a total genre film. It's not, you know, this isn't going to the Oscars. But it's so essentially almost thoughtlessly feminist. Now, there's lots of thoughts built on top of that, but the basis of everything are these female relationships, and not just the relationships, but the empowering of young women in a way that literally had me teared up for the last 35 minutes of the film. Like, just that makes me sound like a cheesy twat, but like, I literally was teared up for 30-35 minutes through the last third of this movie, just because the way these girls are empowering themselves and supporting each other and rallying together, and there's basically no dudes in this movie, and it's and so much the better. Like, it's just about young women, like, stepping into themselves and owning their place in the world, and it's fucking beautiful, man. And it's really funny, and all the characters are winning, and Alicia Pasquale Pena is an absolute superstar. Like, I don't, she's gonna be,
yeah,
she's a rocket ship headed for superstardom. But just like
the takeaway right there is she is a just a screen presence. You know, now that we've seen it a few things, like, it's pretty undeniable.
Yeah, they're just those young people you see on a movie screen, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna be seeing this person 3 times a year for the next 25 years. Because, you know, at a minimum, because you just can't keep that sort of presence off of screen. She's remarkable.
Yeah.
But that's, to me, all of that great stuff about this movie, this is like a 4-star film to me. All of that great stuff about the movie is sort of secondary to how basically, like, it just comes from this deeply empowered female perspective that is so unique for this type of genre film. And I mean, even To All the Boys, which is not, you know, it's not a, like, old school reductive romance film by any stretch. Like, there are empowered female characters. It's very modern, but it's still like a romantic comedy trope about boys and whatnot. And, like, this is just different.
Yeah. To me, this is a little closer to Mindy Kaling's show. I think than To All the Boys per se. You
but
know,
even that
there's a romance
very...
that sort of animates the center of it. And that's really well done too, I think,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I don't know though. This one really, it just struck me as so unique and wonderful. And also, again, like, I don't want my bleeding over how sort of beautiful the message of this was to distract from the fact that it's highly entertaining. It's really clever. The acting and writing is all very good. You know, like, this is a home run. I really think it was a home run, and I was a little worried going into it.
Yeah. Me too. I didn't have huge expectations.
A zine. She made a zine.
Yes. And all this bikini kill. That was great.
Oh, man. By the way, who are those, like, preteen girls covering Bikini Kill?
The Linda Lindas.
Is that a band I should have heard of?
I think that they have done some stuff, but they actually said it in the movie. I don't know why I remembered it, but yeah, they were perfect.
Oh my God, they're real. The Linda Lindas are a real band.
Yeah, I think that's why I was going to say, I think that I've heard of them before. So,
I think they might all be sisters.
Yeah, really solid look. Solid
two
look
sisters, a cousin, and their close friend, half Asian and half Latinx. This is their description on their own website. The Linda Lindas channel the spirit of original punk, power pop, and new wave through today's ears, eyes, and minds. Mila, 10, Eloise, 13, Lucia, 14, and Bella, 16, first played together as part of Kristen Control's pickup band of inexperienced kids for Girls School LA in January 2018. Where they were joined by Bob and Bethany from Best Coast and Karen O.
Wow. Yeah.
Holy yeah. Moses.
Yeah. Only in LA, I feel like.
They also wrote and performed an original song for the Claudia Kishi Club, which was a documentary that premiered on Netflix last year. So this is not their first... This is incredible. They've shared the stage with punk lifers and legends, including the Dills, the Gears, Alley Cats, and Frank.
That's awesome. I would definitely watch them play.
100%. Hold on. They were handpicked by Bikini Kill to open up for them at one of their reunion shows at the Hollywood Palladium.
Wow.
This is amazing.
That rules.
Oh man, the photo shoot of this is also spectacular.
Yeah.
The Linda Lindas, folks. Yeah, okay, so maybe we need to find the Linda Lindas debut album and talk about that. Their first EP is out. Let's add that to the homework.
All right, we'll listen to the Linda Lindas. Yeah.
Watch right, Moxie is the point.
Can I give a couple of mild criticisms of Moxie? I did think the heavies were too heavy.
The heavies were too heavy.
Yes. So, you know, your big bads, if you will, in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Particularly the principal.
Yeah.
Like, they made Marsha Gay Harden's character, like, aggressively oblivious. You know what I mean?
Well, first off, shout out Marsha Gay Harden for being in everything we've watched for, like, the last month. I hear you, but are you sure?
I'm sure. Like,
okay.
I just don't, you know.
I feel like maybe there is some conflict between, like, a relatively woke school in 2020 or 2021 and a principal that aloof. But historically speaking, principals that aloof have been the rule, not the exception, I would say.
Yeah, it's not so much that the aloof, I would just say, like, the way, I don't know. It was a little over the top, is all I'm saying.
I would argue that, in fact, the word you're looking for is not oblivious. It is content or denialist or something, because I would say principals have been rubber stamping that sort of sexist sort of framework of high school society for the entire history of high school.
Yes. I'm not saying that all of this isn't based on things that happen all the time.
Right.
I just think they turned it up to 11. You know what I mean? And as much as I, you know, we mentioned it when we were doing the homework, and thought it was cool that, you know, that Schwarzenegger's kid was in it. I didn't think he was great.
Nope.
As like the worst guy. You know what I mean? He seemed a little miscast, honestly.
Oh, maybe. Although, again, I would say, like, the movie very clearly sends you the message that you don't have to care about that guy very much at all, other than, like, he is a prototype of the bad version of the high school quarterback. And, like, he has a couple scenes to establish that he sucks, but otherwise, he's not in the movie that much, and you don't miss him. And maybe that's because he's not very good. I agree with you, he's not very good. But, like, I didn't care. Because it's not about
none of this ruins the movie for me. These are minor complaints.
Right. No, but I agree. That felt like if your last name's not Schwarzenegger, you don't get that part.
Yeah. And I would like for him to be good. I'm not trying to hate. I think that it might have benefited from understanding, you know, getting a little bit of the charm side of that character. Just to make him that
why
much
do
more
people
evil,
like him?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
No, I agree.
So
I will say this: he got enough of the Kennedy gene pool to play roles that Arnold couldn't.
Absolutely, and I never would have guessed he was Arnold's kid just if I hadn't known going in.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, I mean, you could guess that he's a Shriver Kennedy, but you could not guess that he's a Schwarzenegger without knowing.
Yeah.
Which is good for him, you know.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But Moxie, great time, enjoyed it. Let's
strong
talk about
recommend.
Show.
Yeah, okay. The morning show was a lot, man. You got me into a thing that was a lot, you know. Oh, by the way, at some point, I would kind of like to watch Dickinson. I don't know if you want to join me in that. It's not going to be this week, but just putting it out there. People keep talking about it. I'm mildly interested to see what it looks like.
All right, I can do that for a few.
You know what it
homework.
Is. You know how the concept, right?
It's just about Emily Dickinson, right? Is there something else I need to know?
Well, it's modernized language.
Oh, good. Well, that's great.
Yeah, I mean it's a different sort of take. Anyway, and it's very gay, I think, as well. Anyway, that's a story for another day. Apple TV Plus making products, but I don't think. I mean, there's not a lot to bicker with in terms of the quality of this. It is. I don't know if it's ostentatiously, but it is like very in your face peak, you know, prestige TV, right?
Like, yeah, but I feel like it's like it belongs in the like Showtime wing of prestige TV, right?
Where it's like, no, I don't think it does. I think it belongs. Ooh. I think it belongs in the like secondary tier of HBO, Netflix, prestige TV. It's just not as good as the really good ones, because it it seems at times more concerned about being premier prestige TV than anything else. The look of it, the sort of gloss of it, the heaviness of the subject matter it deals with. In a lot of ways, it's just one of these shows. The reason I wouldn't put it in Showtime is it's not. Most of those Showtime shows feel pretty self-aware. You know,
yeah.
Like there's a levity that there's no levity in the morning show, really. There are funny moments, but there's no levity. That said, it was pretty watchable for a dark show.
Right. That's the whole thing about it is like you're always aware that it's not great. At times, it's kind of a mess, and yet somehow it is compulsively watchable.
Well, like, I think it's pretty simple. Why? I actually think this show's filled with great acting.
Yeah, I think you might be right on that. That's what it is. It's the writing, the acting is just that yeah, constantly good.
The writing is not great, but it's fine. The storyline is not, you know... I mean, it's basically a Law and Order pulled from the headlines storyline, right? It's like, how do we twist this so that it's not necessarily just one specific person, but it basically has all the elements of six different guys who went down during the Me Too era, right?
Yeah.
I mean, pretty Matt Lauer-y.
It's just Matt Lauer, pretty much.
It's a Matt Lauer framework filled with other people's details to some degree, you know?
Yeah.
They try to put it on a line of like, yeah, he's kind of a sinister predator, but also he's pretty likable. And I don't know how well that comes off because mostly he just feels like a sinister predator to me in terms of Steve Carell. But I do think he plays it very interestingly. I think Jennifer Aniston is tremendous. I think Reese Witherspoon is fantastic considering, think of like, Reese Witherspoon had sort of become the suburban mom. Like, that was the niche she had fallen into, and this is straight the hell out of that niche, and she is excellent, I think. Mark Duplass.
Suburban mom gets unwed. Mark Duplass was great.
Martin Short has a really, really intense guest star arc on this that is, you know, frightening, frankly.
Yeah. Speaking of fuck Woody Allen, right? Like, that's quite possibly the basis for that character.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, there's a touch of it in there, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all, this stuff is all real and really happening in show business, and they sort of aimed right at it and fired a Nerf arrow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I'm genuinely curious, like, what is Steve Carell on this show in season two? Like, where do you go with that character?
What is season two? I think that's an open and interesting question.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're making it, whatever it is.
Are they?
I believe so.
I mean, frankly, like, if they wanted to, season two could all take place in, like, 1 week, you know, just the aftermath of the last thing we saw, you know, spoiler alert time. Because if what happens at the end of this is they rat out the network head and talk about it for 5 minutes before someone turns them off the air. But I think the questions are, what happens? What happens to Fred, the network executive? What happens to, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon's characters after going rogue on television? What happens to Mark Duplass? Does he get his job back? Does Billy Crudup, who, by the way,
I was going to say, we went through all this acting, didn't talk about Billy Crudup.
he's my favorite. He is, he, he is playing this character extremely weird. Okay. Like that clearly as he formulated the character in his head, he was like, this guy's weird. And he's going to be weird. But he has so embodied a very specific weird guy, you know? Like, there are weird guy performances that it's like, well, he's just acting like a lunatic, and I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to take away from that. But, like, this guy is a very specific, very precise, weird man that Billy Crudup has embodied perfectly. And he is so interesting and such a like, deep, confusing, but also entertaining character. Like, it is, it's true for a, for what is essentially a throwaway, that's strong, but like, it's not that critical of a role in a lot of ways. Like, he steals the scenes and he is such a like thrill ride of emotions to watch.
Yeah. It's strange because you're right. He has nailed exactly like the specificity of this weirdo. And it's, you know, you don't meet a lot of people who are kind of weird, but also like really charming. There's like that insane moment at the benefit at Jennifer Aniston's house.
Yes.
Where they do a Broadway song and he knocks that out of the park. Billy Crudup, man. It's all, you can't say we didn't know he had it in him. We've seen it before, but we I feel like we don't see him enough.
No, know? I agree. Well, I guess he's doing a lot of stage acting. I not too long ago listened to his Marc Maron interview, and he's a really, I mean, he's an actor's actor. You know, he's a theater guy. He's studied in, various things, and he came up in the song and dance world, and like, he thinks about acting all day long. You know, he's that sort of
dude. He gives off that vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
I wonder what it's like to be like, because, you know, like Christopher Knopf is like that kind of guy.
Chris Knopf. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, except he's, you know, except he's doing the Equalizer and Law and Order.
And he's Mr. Big.
Right. You know what I mean? So it's like, but he's still thinking about acting all day. Like, he's Billy Crudup, and he went to Yale Drama School and all that. I'm sure that's an interesting existence, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. But Crudup really is spectacular in this, and you know, look, man, I this is a really, it's a really good opportunity for both Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon to really get into characters that aren't necessarily, you know, the same lady they've been playing for a lot of their career, and they both do such a good job.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more layered Jennifer Aniston performances you're going to see. And I have a feeling, I mean, obviously, the two of them were pretty involved in the conception of this show. And I think maybe that sort of tells, you know, I think they both took the opportunity to, like, you know, go to TV and do some meaty roles.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit against type. And they had fun with it. And there's just, you know, there are so many great supporting people on the show, even that we haven't mentioned in all this.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot to like.
It's very watchable. It's an interesting thing to watch and have a take on. So I would definitely recommend it. I feel like the first couple episodes came out and it kind of got slammed, and I get it. You know, if I'd only seen the first three, I might feel that way too. Even at the end of it, I don't feel like they pulled everything off exactly, but I enjoyed watching it, and I will lap up another season of it, I would imagine.
Yeah, agreed. I will definitely watch another season.
Good. I'm glad you felt that way, because I didn't necessarily know if you'd had that take, and it was a lot of episodes to take in. So
yeah,
so good on you.
And it is a dark sort of show, but it's not bad time TV per se. It's pretty pacey. You know, it moves along pretty well.
Very pacey. Yeah, and that's a great way to put it.
And there's just a lot of really good acting, I think. And that's worth the price of admission for me, which is free because I got an Apple device in the last year.
Yeah, it is. And everybody pretty much every character in the show pretty much goes to some dark places at some point. So,
no doubt.
So it does. But yet. That's what I mean. It's like it's this weird contradiction. Like, it's not, it doesn't have that heaviness that we've talked about with some of these other shows lately that have been dark, where you don't really want to watch more than one or two.
Yeah, and you know what? Marcia Gay Harden, shout out again. Here she is again.
Yeah, that show has a deep bench, man. Deep bench.
Yeah, I feel like Marcia Gay Harden has been in more things in the last year than in half of her career leading up to that.
Yeah, have to get the IMDb out to know that for sure, but that wouldn't surprise me. Feels like she's out there working. She's the new Margot Martindale.
She does have a bit of a Margot Martindale feel to her, no doubt.
All right, we ready to wrap this thing up? We promised a short show. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, all right. What do we got for homework?
All right, so there's a new Marvel show. I'm going to give it a shot. But and here's the thing I will say. It's Falcon and Winter Soldier, by the way. I will say, this one I'm expecting a superhero thing. You know what I mean? It's right. Not quite like WandaVision. You know what I mean?
Higher artistic expectations.
Yeah. That's what I'll say about this. Okay. There's a movie about Operation Varsity Blues, which was the college admissions scandal that engulfed Hollywood last year. So that's coming on Netflix. We're going to watch that.
Yeah.
Another round. This was your show. You want to tell people about another round?
Yeah, it's a movie starring Mads Mikkelsen, who, I mean, here's what really interests me. And some of this may be in a foreign language. I'm not actually sure. Mads Mikkelsen is a Danish film superstar. Okay. In America, Mads Mikkelsen has basically been a guy that people only want to watch as a vile villain because he just has this look on his face that's like, oh yeah, he's evil. He's a bad guy in Doctor Strange. He's Hannibal in the TV series Hannibal. He's a bad guy. Well, I guess he's not a bad guy, but he's like a tough guy in the Star Wars world. Like, he just looks like he has to be either, he was a bad guy in the Bond film, which one was it? He's the one with the blood coming out of his eye, right?
Yeah.
And he looks like a guy.
He'd definitely be a terrorist in Die Hard if he was.
Exactly. He looks like a guy who's got, he's Grindelwald, for God's sakes, in the new Fantastic Beasts, right? Like,
that means nothing to me, but he
was cast as a very bad guy in the Harry Potter universe, right? Like, that's who he looks like. And this is a movie about him being, as I understand it, sort of the leader of a group of guys who decide to get wasted all the time and see what happens, kind of. And he's like a charming drunk, basically. And so
I'm here for that.
Yeah, I'm just really interested to see the range of a Mads Mikkelsen who, in terms of the American viewer, has really been relegated to a very specific, bad guy role because of his look. This is a chance to see him really do some acting in, as we were saying, against type.
All right. Well, we're excited for that. And then also excited for Minari, which is one of your Oscar-nominated films. Best Picture nominated, right?
Minari is all over the place. It's got Best Supporting Actress. It's got Best Actor in Steven Yeun. It's got Best Director in Lee Isaac Chung. And it is a Best Picture nominee. As far as... now I'm blanking on the name of the movie we were just talking about before, because I'm staring
another
at all
round.
These. Yeah, Another Round, I think, got nominated for something in the Oscars. I'm trying to find it right now. There it is. Director. Another Round, Thomas Vinterberg was nominated for Best Director for that. And it was also Best International Feature. So it is Danish. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing what it's about. It's gotten a lot of good buzz, but it hasn't really hit the mainstream in America yet.
All right. Well, it's going to hit the mainstream on this show.
Damn right.
And then, of course, we'll be back on Thursday with the challenge recap.
Was that all of, did we already do all the homework?
That's it. That's the homework. Four things.
Okay. Bye then.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.